Hello, everybody. NYPD Blue Balls. It's season 1, episode 8. Tempest in a C cup. And who is this Tempest in the C cup? Her name is Donna Abundando. Don't know the actress's name. I don't think I wrote it down. But basically, she's here to let you know that NYPD Blue is not afraid to have them titties out on display in the station.
So she's basically hired as a secretary.
Uh-huh.
Fancy throws around a lot of, like, big words to, like, oh, you're here to assist the officers in clerical, and it's like, she's a fucking secretary, just call her what she is.
Wait, do you think, hold on, we're out of the gate, I have a question.
Okay.
Do you think Fancy was, like, tripping up because he had a boner for this Abundando?
No. I think instead of just, like, saying, like, hey, you applied for this secretary's job,
mm-hmm.
we finally got the funding, he made it, like, fucking way longer. He was like, oh, you're gonna, you know, you've applied for the job where you assist the officers in clerical advising and blah, 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 and it's like, just call it a fucking secretary and let's move on, you know?
Also, basically,
while she's getting talked to, all the dudes in the office are, like, running into shit.
Which, like, I don't do that often. I don't see a girl that I find attractive and then run into things anymore.
Kirk, I've never... Like, that made me wonder, like, something. Men are disgusting.
Yeah, we are. We are the most disgusting right? people ever.
And it's not really, like, women's fault.
Nope, like, it isn't.
They've been denied so many rights just off the fact that men are disgusting.
And they've only been reinforced to either be sex objects... Or, like, just pets we keep around and, like, do shit for us. So then when they try and break out, we're like, hey, that's our job. Mer, mer, mer. No, it's terrible. We've treated women terribly for a very long time.
But, like then, because then Fancy turns to Donna and is like, which, I have a question about this. He asks her, are you sure you want to work here? You know, it's all men.
Uh-huh.
Is that appropriate for him to ask?
I think what he was trying to say, but he can't come out and say it, is, hey, do you want all these cock knockers to be coming to your desk every 5 minutes to try and get in your pants? Because it's gonna happen. That's okay, what I think enough. He was saying. I don't think he was saying, like, oh, there might be too much dick in here for you. I don't know if you can handle
it. No, I don't think he was saying that either. I was looking at it on the fact of, like, hey, she's equal. Would you ask a man, oh, there's a bunch of women here, would it be hard for you to, is it going to be hard for you to be around, you know?
Uh-huh. But as you said even before, Fancy is trying to make it sound more interesting than it is, and he's also trying to, like, make it as official as it can be. And I imagine that he just doesn't know how to come out and say, hey, these are a bunch of red meat eating, hard drinking. Like, one of them is the guy from Orange is the New Black, Mike Roberts.
Mike Roberts. I love Mike Roberts.
Mike Roberts is in this. Well, not
the fucked up stuff.
Michael Healy on Orange is the New Black. He's in this as Mike Roberts.
He was in True Detective.
That's right. He was in True Detective. The dude's good.
He was in Deadwood. He kills in a Deadwood. He plays a racist. He plays a racist farmhand. Oh.
Don't say that, Kyle. They're gonna think we're Trump supporters or KKK.
I think Mike Roberts is a better detective than Medavoy. Because...
Okay.
Detective.
Okay.
Oh, and then we also... This is where we also see Metafoy being a straight bitch. When he sees Don Abundando and, like, won't even fucking talk. He's just like...
he's literally embodying the joke that all the blood left your brain and went to your dick. He's just embodying the idea that Sipowicz, like, dragged him over and was like, speak, dog! And I couldn't do it.
Oh, how embarrassing. That's so embarrassing when someone else has to flirt for you.
And when that person...
And Sipowicz was, like, killing it.
And when that person not only is more charming than you are, that person looks like Dennis Franz.
Yeah.
No offense to Dennis Franz. Sipowicz
has got,
He's got mad game. That's it.
Oh, dude, that dude's got skills.
Let's point this out. This is the episode where ADA Costas comes back.
Hold on, let's not get to that yet. We're missing, like, the whole point of the,
okay,
of
fine.
The episode.
What's the point of the episode? You do it.
So Metavoy's being a bitch when it comes to Donna. Sipowicz, Martinez, and Andy, before that, arrest a dude who's naked. Like, straight up, just go in there, rest him naked, and they're bring him back to the station.
Uh-huh.
What you find out is that the guy that they picked up shot somebody and killed him, and he was a fireman, but he's also the father of someone who works on the police force.
A
bunch of other crimes that they're going to try to pin on him. So, Andy, out of nowhere, goes, have you figured out the topless bar situation, Sting? And Fancy's like, yeah, we're going to change it. And he's like, well, you know, no need to do that. And basically weasels his way back to go to a topless bar.
And he does it. He does it with Medavoy. And here's the thing. Here's the thing about the scene that you went over a little bit. They're going to arrest this guy, like Kyle said, to attach him to crimes through a series of interrogations. It's a really long concept case, and it's really cool, especially because it's early in the series, where they like set up an idea of a case and then work you through it, but it's really cool.
Yeah.
But the important thing about that scene is they go to bust him, and he runs out of his house naked, covered in tattoos, and he kicks Sipowicz in the dick. And Sipowicz says, let me drop kick this asshole right through the window. Sipowicz says, hey, please let me kick this dude out the window for kicking me in the nuts. And then they go, come on, Sipowicz, we gotta do this right. He's like, no, let's go by the book. Oh, it's so good. It's Sipowicz being the best. And then he comes back from that, and he goes, hey, Fancy, look, like, this deal is somebody else's case, now it's ours, and Martinez is gonna
be repeating everything I just said.
I understand, but just to say this, he goes, hell, I mean, well, I could do the topless bar. I could just do the topless sting. He's like, you want to do the topless sting? He's like,
I just said that.
But the way he does it is so coy. You're leaving that out. The way he expresses it to Fancy is just like, well, I mean, you know, if nobody else. And then I think Fancy, to punish him, goes, yeah, take Medavoy. Because he knows Medavoy is going to harsh his style in Buzz.
But then before they leave, Medavoy talks about, like, oh, I'm excited to work with you.
Uh-huh.
And then says, like, yeah, you're in my space. Me and my therapist talked, and, like, you get
critical
in my
space. Wasn't it critical space?
Like, critical space. So then Sipowicz just gets, like, all up in his grill and is being an asshole to him. That reminded me so much of Neff.
Really?
100%. Like, if you would have told Neff, like, oh, I don't like people getting in my face, he would just, like, get, like, or anything. He would just do it to you just to piss you off.
I thought it was a good type of conversation between, because what makes good writing or good storytelling is characters that are very different clashing together. And you have this guy, Medavoy, who's like, I just was at my therapist, which now Sipowicz is like, yeah, this fruitcake, he needs a fucking therapist. Like, my therapist.
Yeah, what a fag.
Like, my therapist is the Mets game when I go home. And
no.
And he's like, yeah, he talked to me about critical space. And then Sipowicz is like, what the fuck are you talking about, Medavoy? So it's, but what's super cool is their whole scene, their whole case is they have to bust prostitution at just a regular bar.
At a topless bar.
A regular topless bar.
And then, real quick, because this is what I think the whole episode is about. Mm-hmm. It's about two things. You mentioned it earlier. It's about Sipowicz and Costas falling in love.
Or starting. It's the very baseline.
No, they're falling in love. And then I think it's David Caruso teaching James Martinez how to be a detective.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And it's those two things. Because at the same time while that's happening, they're at the topless bar, Martinez is learning from Caruso how to, like, get this guy to admit to more and more of things that he did.
Now this was made in 94. And we're in 2016, and we're watching it. Did it seem like they were manipulating that guy? Yeah, he's a murderer, and he's obviously a bad person, the way that they paint him. But they're manipulating that guy very hard. Because they basically lie to him repeatedly, and then once he confesses, they basically go, yeah, whatever, and just leave him in the room.
Yeah, but I think the way they talked about the evidence, they would have had him even if he confessed or not.
But they were just saving time and witnesses, is what he's saying.
Yeah. And so I look at it this way. I look at it, if all the evidence lines up and it's 100% him, like, then I feel at that point, fuck it, do whatever you have to do. But if there's doubt and you don't know, like, I think you gotta... But, I mean, I think the way they talked about it is, They definitely had him on the first four.
Uh-huh.
And then the fifth and sixth one were different or something.
No, the fifth one was in a different district, I guess.
Yeah, and then the sixth one, I think there was a gun involved.
And a murder.
Yeah, so they were like, well, they match all of these. At that point, it's like, okay, if for sure they had you on these four, you admit to it. And then you got the fifth and sixth one that are the exact same thing with, like, the same duct tape in one of them, I think they even said. It's like, all right, come on.
It's one of those things where that's the point of the episode, too, because in this episode, David Crusoe is trying to be super, super hard at one point. And to me, it comes off like a 15-year-old kid telling me to stop talking and being aggressive.
Well, he babies it. He's, like, super cool with him, like, we're bros, like, we're homies and shit. Uh-huh. And then when he gets to the murder, he turns into, like, major hard-ass, which I wrote the word down. I don't know if I trademarked this word, but I'm gonna trademark it now. Whisper tough.
Whisper tough.
Trademark.
Whisper tough.
Whisper tough.
Whisper tough.
This dude is just straight up like, you don't know what you don't know what's gonna happen to you. I'm gonna get you.
Okay, yeah,
like shit like that, and it's just like, dude, come on, man.
Kyle,
like,
in this episode, something happens that I immediately was like, okay, now I'm out of it. Where the guy stands up, right? The guy stands up in the middle of the interrogation, and David Caruso just goes, "Sit down," and then James Martinez goes, "Sit down," and then the guy sits down, and you're like, "What?" Like when that happens in Sipowicz's room, he basically says something like, "If you don't sit back down, I'm taking your shoe off and I'm beating you to death with it." Like he comes up with some weird like threat with the sit down, but basically this is showing James Martinez learning from him, not just the technical side, but also the, hey, you may have to threaten a guy that you'll beat him to shit if he doesn't admit to what he did.
Well, then to get him to confess, he asks everyone to leave the room, and then as he's leaving, he gives his gun to Martinez and says, "Take this."
Oh, yeah.
And then at the end, Martinez is like sticking around, and Caruso can kind of tell he wants to talk about something, and he goes, "Would you have beat that guy?" And then he gives him the rules.
No, he doesn't even know if he beat him, because he said, "Did I beat a confession out of him?" Because James Martinez is like, "Can I talk to you about something?" And he goes, "You want to know if I beat a confession out of him?" And the guy says, "Yeah." And he's like, "No, but I threatened I would, and I would have." And it's like, it's kind of a sobering moment, but I felt like in 93 it's more accessible and acceptable. Nowadays, in today's climate, that part is...
Yeah.
That would get your show fucking hashtag cancel NYPD Blue. It'd be... like thunderous.
But then he gives Martinez his like rules of like when you beat people.
But it does. I don't think it covers it. I don't think it covers it now. It wouldn't cover it now.
No. Oh no. I'm just saying in the terms of the show.
Because even Sipowicz, like, the flawed
even Sipowicz goes by it.
Yeah. So it's kind of it's an awkward thing because nowadays in our view of the world, like it doesn't seem acceptable. But, like, thinking of then with cops back then, if that was acceptable, then think about what it was like 20 years before that. 20 years before the 90s, when cops could just bring you in and beat the shit out of you and then let you out and say, yeah, this didn't happen.
And when all that's going on, Medavoy and Sipowicz go to the topless bar.
Go to the titty bar. And we see some side titties. We see some side titties and some butt.
They both get, solicited by two different girls.
Yes, they do.
And so then they're able to arrest them, and then the main target, which is the owner of the club, because they think that he's working as a front for a mob boss.
For money laundering.
Yeah. They bring him in.
Yeah, this is a great Sipowicz case, because Sipowicz, it's like an open and shut case, and Sipowicz nails it. But then he gets a curveball in the middle of it when he's talking to one of the prostitutes.
No, he doesn't nail it. See, that because when he's talking to the prostitute and she's like, "Can't you let me go?" And he's like, "Look," and he says, he's like, "I don't care. I don't really care about you or what you do." He goes, "But if I let you walk, I gotta let your boss walk, and that's who we want." And then she goes, "Well, what if I could help you take him down?" And then it kind of gets on the ball rolling on him and this girl being like, yeah, like, it's a cash business. Do you think they claim all that cash? No. Like, I can tell you the banks, I can tell you this. And so kind of just trying to go after this guy.
And with that, then basically it shows Sipowicz like, hey, this isn't the same run-of-the-mill prostitutes. Like, this is a prostitute that she said, I don't want the life, and she really doesn't want it, because this will only give her grief to like, tattle on this dude. So it's not in her best interest to do it, unless she wants to get away from it.
Yeah.
So it's a good scene, but then a monkey wrench gets thrown in, because the owner of the bar gives his testimony, and it is completely...
And Costas only took his testimony first.
Well, Costas did that because Andy called her a prissy little bitch on the courthouse steps.
Costas only hears one side of the story. And so then she comes in and starts like giving Andy a fistful, basically. Mm-hmm. And Andy takes it.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy's like, you know, you're right. I was an asshole. I'm sorry. But take her, like, just wait. Like, take her side before you judge, you know? Because he could have been a jerk, you know? But yeah, he wasn't.
And Andy, it's like, I remember watching this from the beginning. I did not get any inclination that Sipowicz actually had a thing for Costas until he pulls that random asking her out of his ass. Like, do you remember how weird that was when she comes back from getting her testimony and she goes, I guess I have to apologize.
She says something in Latin, and he's like, oh, don't do that Latin crap with me. Doesn't he?
I think
so. Oh, no, that's after she asks him out. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So he goes, no big deal. I still owe you from that outburst at the courthouse. And he walks up, and he's like, so you just, like, want to go out or something? And the look on her face was like, the fuck? And then
well, she says, why would I ever want to go out with someone like you? And he basically goes, I don't know, to eat? Like, we're hungry?
And then she says yes, and then they go out. It's like the weirdest, beginning of a television relationship, because it literally comes out of left field and then just sticks around. Like, there was no foreplay to that relationship. It was literally ask out on a date, like, so fast.
No, she comes in one other episode before.
But only to talk to Kelly. Kelly with Lou the werewolf.
No, there's one before that, because I talked to you about it. I think there's one, like, that she makes one appearance. It's weird, but I don't think it's that weird. You know what I mean? Him asking her out.
It is weird, because it comes literally out of nowhere, and it's to a person that we've only seen him yell at. We've only seen him interact with her in a negative way, and then all of a sudden, after Abundando shows up, and he's like, there's no way I'm gonna get in there. He's like, hey, Costas, you wanna, like, go out or something? Like, he straight
up... But here's the thing, I don't think Andy would have ever gone after Abundando. I honestly think... I think he's liked her for a long time.
But he was just drunk, and he couldn't get his shit together?
He was just a drunk asshole.
Could be. Could be the subtext there.
That's what I think.
And they go they go on the date, right, in this episode?
Yeah, and then guess what? Guess what you find out? Sylvia Costas graduated from St. John's, bitch.
I know. I was gonna put the spotlight on you. I was gonna catch you red-handed that's the only reason you wanted to go there, is because Sylvia...
On my tombstone, it's gonna say Kyle Asher graduated from the same school as Sylvia Costas, St. John's University.
I remember when I heard that, I was like, that's why Kyle wanted to go.
Oh, 100%.
Because she name dropped it in NYPD Blue.
She basically tells her whole life story, which is kind of weird.
That doesn't happen on first dates often? Just life story beginning
she basically
to end.
Tells her whole life story, and then Andy's like, yeah, I like fish. and then she's like, well, why'd you order it? And he's like, no, I mean, like, I'm telling you something about me. I like saltwater tropicals and shit.
It's so weird to think about, because we didn't know fish was a thing. We didn't know it until right now. But fish just isn't, like, a thing. This is Andy's, like, model trains. This is Andy's Call of Duty. Like, this is Andy's...
So, let me ask you a question. Do you think it's something that he developed after... for his sobriety, and it's something that he could control, And so, like, that's why he's so OCD. We find out he's so OCD about it. Because I think as a drunk, you wouldn't have, like, fish.
Owning fish isn't a drunk's hobby, is what you're saying?
Well, no, because the way he talks about it is you have to, like, feed him at a certain time, make sure the pH level's like this, and all this shit.
You can't just be adding new fishes to the tank. You gotta...
Yeah, you know what I mean? And so, like, he always is so OCD about things. I don't think he could do that as a drunk.
Yeah. Maybe that did happen after he got sober. But maybe it's something that has always been there, but he did it on a lower scale. And then once he sobered up, it became, like, his actual...
obsession.
I mean, little spoiler alert, little bit of sneak peek. When we talk about the greatest of Sipowicz's partners, Bobby Simone, Bobby Simone has a similar thing with pigeons, and it's just something that they use to deal with their trauma in their life, is these animals that they could take care of.
Which is weird.
It also speaks to their characters, because Simone is basically Batman. Charming, physical, and then Andy Sipowicz.
He's got the jawline for it. He's just too brown.
Jimmy Smits would be a kick-ass Batman. That's a petition we should have had, like, 15 years ago. Jimmy Smits for fucking Batman.
Or Superman? He could have been Superman.
No, he's too brown for Superman. It gets too close to the allegory that is an alien.
Oh, wow. It came out so smooth that it took me off guard. There's also another part of the story that we totally skipped over.
What's that?
And it was Kelly's ex-wife.
Oh, yeah.
Voice records her boss basically being a douche.
And trying to blackmail her into committing fraud.
Yeah, so that he doesn't lose his cases, and she gets him on tape. And then plays it back for him and is like, you're going to write me a glowing recommendation. And, like...
Which, like, I'm not...
Which, lets me... I have a question about that, but go ahead.
I'm not a television writer. But I've watched a lot of television, and I've watched a lot of movies. And they tried to play this scene like it was like a, oh man, she got the fucking best of you, son! Like, that's how they played it. But all she did was record the conversation after he asks, hey, are you recording the conversation?
So this leads me to a question. So you've heard about this whole, like, D'Angelo Russell thing, right?
Yeah, kind of at work.
So is what she did she break the law bro code?
Did she break the law bro code?
Because you're not really supposed to, like, record your, you know, members of the law practice you work at. It's supposed to be, like, that anonymity,
oh,
you know?
I thought you were talking about the actual Lakers situation, and I was like,
no. So
what does this have to do with
the,
it?
Did she break the bro code for
of
the
lawyers?
Law people? For attorneys? Did she break the bro code?
Well, Kyle, the thing about attorneys is they're all kind of horrible people who use lying and loopholes to get ahead and where they get paid millions of dollars to redirect words to win cases. So they're not great people. So I'm not really surprised that they would record each other, but it's just not very, it's not crafted well that the way that they have her getting over on him is literally, hey, so, remind me again of what you're doing. And then he says all of it out loud. But before he does, he goes, don't record this. And then she comes in with the recording and goes, how badass am I? Like this.
No.
Like that, like in a normal movie, it would have been like, no, I'm not recording. And then you find out she actually had the boss in the room with them, but like sitting in a seat next to the door, and he didn't see him. Because then it's like, wow, she just pulled the wool over your eyes. It was just a dumb thing. But it basically, and it speaks to your point, this bitch can't keep a job. She's moving again.
Right? Right?
This is what, job number 4, and we're on episode 8?
Bitch can't keep a job, man. Then I'm supposed to feel bad for her. I'm supposed to feel bad for her with all this shit going on in her life. She can't keep a goddamn job.
But basically, like, because we didn't go over that scene without explaining it at all. Her boss wants her to lie about who killed Girardella, even though she doesn't know, really.
No. Girardella throws out there, like, if I'm ever shot and killed, you know who it is. It's this person.
Mm-hmm.
And so what her boss wants to do is take that and just say, like, oh, you heard him say, oh my god, I was shot by Marino's people. And use that so they could go at it and keep the case.
But the way he blackmails her about this is he said that he'll put in for a transfer for her and say that she's hard to work with and moves around a lot. Quick question. If she transfers from this job, even with a glowing recommendation, doesn't that spread the same rumor by her actions?
Exactly. Like, someone goes like, the last, 3 weeks you've been at 4 different places. Okay.
Interesting. Even though they all gave you great recommendations, we still have questions.
Weird. But.
Yeah, her stuff is written so fast, I think. I think it was like an afterthought, where you're just like, oh yeah.
No, I was reading that the reason she left the show after the first season is because
Kelly was no longer there?
Well, no. Her role got smaller and smaller because Sipowicz and Costas' role got bigger and bigger. So she left because they're basically they didn't know what to do with her anymore. And Kelly had Lukowski, and so it was like people really didn't give a fuck about her. So she left and went to ER and did fine.
Oh, she was at ER? I didn't know.
She was at ER at the beginning, right around the beginning of it. She did fine.
ER is a show, we're getting close to the end.
I want to watch that next, dude.
I haven't seen ER ever. I haven't seen ER at all, so I don't know.
I remember some episodes. I want to watch them.
I know that it was pre-Batman and Robin Clooney. I know that. I know.
Noah Wiley was in it.
The chick from Freaks and Geeks shows up at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, this episode, we didn't touch on it much. We'll touch on it more next episode, but it just hammered home the point that Metaboy's a bitch.
Also, I guess in 1994, your comedic moments have to be that loud and big and stupid. After a conversation like that with Metaboy, you would think that he has an actual brain issue.
Yeah.
If Metaboy came up to you and didn't say a single word for as long as he did and just stared, you would think, okay, his brain is broken.
It was like Mice and Men, when when fucking Andy walks fucking Metaboy up to her. It's like him walking up, I forgot the big dumb retard's
Lenny.
Name.
Lenny.
Lenny. It's like Lenny with his mouse and shit. Like it doesn't make... He just says...
Also, I'll say
this. But wait a second. Uh-huh. You're still going to want to fuck me.
Yeah. I remember watching that scene. I remember watching that scene twice when they have sex because I couldn't believe it. I was like, they actually had this happen. They said, yeah... That tracks with us. It tracks that would happen between Abadondo and Metaboy. That's a little peek to the next episode, which I guess we're doing... Not next episode, but future episodes.
It's a gingergasm.
I had a question about Abadondo. Because the one thing I didn't say that I thought about saying... I felt
she's super into hockey.
She's super into hockey, but I felt she said something that, the way she delivered the line was insulting. Where he goes... your desk is right across from the catching bench. Do you know what that is? And she gives, the 1950s I'm a dumb woman explaining it voice. You know what I mean? That's the place where...
No. I took that differently. I took that as she was... she was explaining everything by the book.
I don't know. I took it as... But maybe that's it, and maybe she is that intelligent and that, by the book, that straightforward... But
she's super smart. You find out that she's pretty smart. But they have her talk in a dumb voice.
Yeah, they have her talk with a voice that makes you think hey.
Because for some reason people think men women when they talk like this the whole time. Oh my god.
No, they think guys like it when a woman talks like she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Like a child.
Ugh. Which is gross. That's just as gross as that guy from the last
episode. Did you hear the guy, Jared, from Subway got his ass kicked in prison?
No. You're telling me that they don't love Jared, the Subway guy, in prison?
they're about some $5 footlongs, though.
I assumed everybody in jail were getting their Subway sandwich signed by Jared. Anyway, you have any final thoughts about this episode? Is there something that we definitely didn't talk about that we need to?
No, it's just the beginning of the greatest love story on TV ever.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Sipowicz has a line. We didn't say it. But Sipowicz has a line in this one. He has a couple lines in this one. But it's at the strip club. He says, A plus in the tit department, Monique. Oh, man. Good stuff.
One of my other favorite ones is when, like, she's soliciting him for money. Like, she asks him, like, oh, 20 bucks for this thing. Do you want that? And then someone's like, sure, I can get it up.
So weird. We did Famous Faces, Michael Healy. We don't have any burning questions.
No, we answered the burning questions. I asked about... Well, I guess my question is like... Well, not really a question, but the thought was... How women have been denied so much just solely off the fact that men are dumb and disgusting.
Yeah.
Like, she can't come work with us because she's got big tits. And it's going to make me want to fuck her.
A little...
Basically, that whole opening should have been like, gee, boss, do you see those titties? How do you expect me to do the cop work anymore? You know? Like, it's like, come on. It's like...
it's honestly like, NYPD Blue started going, and they're like, okay, I need you to get me casting on a female clerk character who's smarter than she looks. Okay, what am I looking for? What are the looks like? I want her tall, blonde, huge tits. Looks like she came right out of somebody's calendar that they have in their office. And okay, and I want her to sound like she's presenting trucks at a truck show. Okay, we got her. And she shows up and I'm like, okay, so she's just a cartoon character, right? Cause,
yeah.
But yeah.
But I end up really liking her as
yeah,
a character.
Yeah, of course you do. We all do, eventually. Next week we have the one little spoiler / thing to look forward to. We do have some Famous Faces back in the mix next
yeah,
week.
We'll discuss those.
Anyway, it's been NYPD Blue Balls. Every episode's on AsherBrothersPodcast.com. I'm at Kirk Has Glasses. The show is at AsherBrosPod. And Kyle, is there anything you want to recommend for the people?
Yeah. I got tickets to go see Brand New and Modest Mouse.
So did I.
So listen to some Brand New and Modest Mouse.